Welcome to the American Maritime Podcast. I'm Mike Roberts, your host. We appreciate you taking some time to be with us today. And I want to thank the American Maritime Partnership for supporting this podcast. I'm very excited about today's discussion. We're going to talk business economics in an interesting market. That's the market between the state of Hawaii and the U.S. mainland. With us is John Reeve. John is an economist with several decades of experience in transportation, particularly in the maritime industry. He actually managed cargo ships out of Australia early in his career. He then went to business school, and after business school, John joined the top maritime consulting firm in the United States. He's had his own consulting shop for about 20 years now, and he's been advising senior executives on business strategy in virtually all parts of the maritime industry, both in the domestic and international markets. He's also done assessments of U.S. military sea lift requirements and capabilities and economic studies in a number of other areas. So, John, welcome. It's great to have you with us today.
That's always a pleasure, Mike. Great pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. So we have your study of the Hawaii shipping trade between the mainland and the state of Hawaii. Tell us a little bit about the study, and then we'll dive into the details.
Well, I had the great pleasure to team up with Paul Brubaker, an economist based in Hawaii. Paul has a background as the chief economist for the Bank of Hawaii. This study was the second in a series of studies that we've done in this area of looking at the impact of Jones Act on non-contiguous states. The previous one was done for Puerto Rico a couple of years ago and included input from a renowned Puerto Rican economist. So basically, we wanted to take an overall look at the market involving shipping operations between the mainland and Hawaii, and then look at the real impact of the Jones Act and the involvement of American ships in that market, particularly on the cost of living and consumer prices on the island, as compared to the mainland.
And there was a second economic study done of the Hawaii trade. Do you have any information on that?
Yes, thanks, Mike. I've reviewed that report as well. This is an anti-Jones Act group. There are a number of other fairly recent studies in the same regard. And they take a very different approach than Paul Brubaker and I did.
So before we get in that, and we'll have a chance to talk about both of these studies, but I'd like to take a minute, if we can, to put this into context. Your normal consulting work has you working with senior executives of shipping companies or ports or shippers like Walmart and so on. Those analyses look at, you know, business strategy issues, changing port rotations or investing in new ships. Is this that kind of a study that we're talking about today?
No, Mike. Basically, we're taking a step back and look at what happens to this market, the shipping of goods between the mainland and Hawaii. And if you change the essential or basic rules that apply to that in terms of regulation and which carriers can operate in that trade. So, and in particular, if you waive the Jones Act, which applies to who now moves cargo between the mainland and Hawaii. If you waive that, what would be the implications for the people of Hawaii? So the Jones Act basically says if you're shipping goods by water between two American points, you have to use an American ship that's owned by Americans, that's built in America, employs American seafarers, that pays American taxes and obeys American laws, as anyone operating in domestic commerce of the U.S. must do. So, of course, foreign ships that are operating in U.S. foreign trade don't have to do that.
So why would anyone want to get rid of American ships in the Hawaii market?
Well, the claim is that the Jones Act that requires American ships and American seafarers to service the Hawaii mainland trade, if you take those Americans out of those that operation, that would reduce the costs of goods in Hawaii to the best improvement of cost of living in Hawaii.
So your study looked at the market to see if that was true?
Yes. We basically wanted to focus on the facts. you know, not some kind of arcane econometric model, but basically what are the facts, what do goods cost in Hawaii, what do goods cost on the mainland, and essentially prove or disprove the case whether the Jones Act has any real impact, particularly negative or positive impact on the people of Hawaii.
Okay, great. What did you find?
Well, first of all, the market of shipping between Hawaii and the mainland is very competitive today using a variety of normal economic metrics.
So let me just stop you there for a second, John. There's only two or three carriers in the market, and you say it's a competitive market. Can you please explain that?
Well, today there were four carriers of late, but now there are three. But major barge operators have condensed their services into a single operation. But the market is not big enough to have a variety of carriers serving this trade. Now, the shippers in this market, and as Mike mentioned, we're talking about major retailers, but also much smaller enterprises in Hawaii, depend on regular service, fast transit time, direct calls between the mainland and Hawaii, and economies of scale and operation. You cannot have a dozen operators providing service every couple of weeks or every month or whatever they would do in a market like this. You need those attributes. And it's worth noting that in the airline sector, there are only four airlines currently serving Hawaii from the mainland. And these are, again, U.S. airlines. So if you put all those factors together, the market with two container ship and roll-on, roll-off operators and a barge operator basically is the right number to provide all of those attributes of fast transit time, direct service, et cetera.
So if we know that it structurally is it should be a competitive market, how do we know whether they're actually competing?
Yeah, we just looked at the facts. Now, one fact that's really paramount here, perhaps, is that the ocean freight rates, and we're not including inland trucking in this case, so that we're not distorting anything by including what happened there, but the ocean freight rates have not increased over the last decade. They've basically been flat, and that's in nominal dollars, or essentially the same dollars over time. So in real dollars, they've gone down. So if you take a benchmark like what happened in mainland intercity trucking rates, those prices went up by 28% over the last 10 years. So other indicators of a competitive market say the same thing. We've had new entrants, we've had companies exit. We've had major investments to upgrade the fleets and terminal operations. These carriers have invested over $2 billion in long-term assets, you know, looking to serve this market for the next 30 years. These are bigger ships, more efficient ships. They're the most efficient and environmentally friendly ships, frankly, in the world, powered by LNG if necessary. So very strong capabilities in logistics. And all of these services and assets are focused on meeting the needs of customers in Hawaii. So these guys are dedicated to serving Hawaii, not a broad global market with standardized services. You know, what these carriers have done in the last several years is to really improve the services to Hawaii with brand new assets and assets that are going to be here to serve Hawaii for the next several decades. And all of this came out in our study.
That's very helpful. Does this other study offer any evidence that contradicts your findings as to the competitiveness of the market today?
No, sadly, the other study does not look at current facts. And as a matter of fact, they go back almost 40 years to try and find data on differences between U.S. Carrier costs and foreign carrier costs. And they certainly don't look at the competitiveness, particularly in terms of service levels and the impact on what any kind of change in the current Jones Act operations for Hawaii would do if you were to introduce foreign carriers into that market.
What did the other study look at?
Well, it's relatively simplistic. They just assume that kicking out the American ships would result in a lowering of shipping rates. Now, you know, in face value, that may make sense because American seafarers and American-built ships do cost more than foreign operators from, say, the Philippines or India or China, and also the foreign built ships and from China, Korea, et cetera, do cost more to build. But then they plug those figures into a black box econometric model and spit out numbers that frankly are absurd. But the problem is all of those, the foreign cost differentials could well disappear.
So why don't you go on about that? Well, how do you respond to that argument?
Well, first of all, getting rid of American ships and American sailors may well not result in lower shipping rates.
Even though the costs would be lower?
Well, once you have to operate in a U.S. domestic service, such as the service between the mainland and Hawaii, you would be subject to other U.S. laws and regulations other than the Jones Act that impact taxes, safety issues on the ships, and so on. So the cost benefit to the foreign carrier could well disappear once they actually had to operate in domestic service under U.S. law. The other thing I would point out is that only around a third of the costs of a shipping operation by American carriers today is impacted by the Jones Act. There are several other costs that would apply to the foreign flag carriers, such as fuel, the equipment, sales, administration, and of course, the stevedoring, because the same stevedores are going to put cargo on those ships and discharge them. So it's not quite clear at all whether there would be any cost benefit of introducing foreign ships into this market.
You mentioned the possibility of foreign vessels coming into the market. They might be from Philippines, they might be from China. Is it possible that there might be two or three Chinese shipping companies who would take over the trade, and at some point they might not as compete as aggressively as American carriers do?
Yeah, I mean, those would be the carriers at the forefront who could possibly penetrate this trade. They're involved in a major way in the Trans-Pacific trade, i.e. between Asia and the U.S. and Canada. So, you know, they would be the ones to look at first. And these are heavily subsidized ocean carriers, basically owned by the Chinese government. And I think that raises some major issues.
I would tend to agree with that. The idea that they might shut down the service or withhold service to particular customers if they didn't like what they had to say about the Chinese government.
Yeah, that's a major concern. I mean, right now we have American carriers serving American citizens on both sides of the mainland Hawaii shipping market. And by the way, we don't have Chinese airlines flying people between Hawaii and the mainland. We don't have Chinese truckers moving cargo around Hawaii or in the mainland. So that's why some of these suggestions that the Jones Act be waived for the maritime trade perhaps don't make much sense.
So is there anything else about this other study that caught your attention?
Well, you know, the way they treat the costs in their econometric model there is interesting. I mean, basically, they could have done exactly the same kind of study looking at almost any other kind of business in Hawaii, you know, whether it be trash hauliers or pizza delivery guys. You know, in theory, we could waive all kinds of laws to replace American workers with foreign workers who would work at a lower wage. And then you plug the differential in those wage rates into the econometric black box and create the same kind of crazy numbers that come out the other end. And in this case of the recent study, they claim economic damage to the population of Hawaii of $1.2 billion. Now, that's actually a figure that's higher than the total revenue of the carriers involved in American carriers moving cargo between Hawaii and the mainland. So basically, the claim is that they could move that cargo for free and there would still be economic damage.
And there would be presumably at least some concern about the security of the supply chain between the mainland and Hawaii.
Exactly. I mean, really big time, Mike. I mean, basically, we have ceded control of that supply chain to foreign carriers who who in the global geopolitical sphere are major competitors with the United States, and frankly, who operate from a very different playbook. And again, considering how important Hawaii is to some of our national security issues in the Pacific, that would be ceding control of an essential lifeline to our military and civilian population of Hawaii.
Would there also be an effect on the broader, on sort of broader national security issues?
Well, you know, the Jones Act is a key element of our ability to provide military sea lift on a global basis. The Jones Act seafarers that are highly trained provide a key component. As you probably, I know you know, Mike, that the U.S. Navy maintains a fleet in ready reserve status that are able to move military equipment and supplies and personnel if necessary and to anywhere in the globe. But they don't have crews to do this. When they need to man those ships, they turn to American seafarers. And in the fairly recent deployments of personnel and equipment to Afghanistan and Iraq, 50% of the seafarers on those vessels that were pulled out of ready reserve status and then moved our equipment and supplies to the Middle East came from Jones Act operations.
That's interesting. So it's an important source. It's essentially a reserve force for our manning our vessels in times of a military contingency.
Absolutely right. Yes.
So let me shift a little bit here. I don't know if you saw an interview by Congressman Ed Case recently. He's the only representative of the non-contiguous states that supports a Jones Act waiver. And yet he said in this interview that a Jones Act waiver would not hurt the American seafarers. How do you respond to that?
Well, that just makes no sense. You're essentially replacing them with foreign seafarers. So there go their jobs. And, you know, we talked about the what would happen if the other maritime laws and you know, or domestic commerce laws would be applied. But if American mariners were still required under the case of a Jones Act waiver, the cost savings that this other study assumes simply would not exist. The study would be even more wrong than it already is. Now, Case actually admits that these other taxes, laws, and regulations would apply. So in that case, and as recently documented by the U.S. Department of Transportation, that would essentially negate any cost advantage of a foreign operation, whether it be ship or by foreign seafarers.
It's interesting. Let me ask another question. In your study, and I would encourage our listeners to take a look at the study. It's on the AmericanMaritimePartnership.com website. But and that study gets into this this next question quite a bit. And that's, we all recognize that the cost of living in Hawaii is very high relative to other states. And the assumption is that, and quite often the narrative is that it's because you have to ship everything there. And of course, the cost of shipping is higher because of it's American ships. What was your findings around what drives the cost, the relatively high cost of living in Hawaii?
Well, you're absolutely right, Mike. I mean, Hawaii is either at the top or very close to the top of all of our states in terms of cost of living. They're in the same group as New York, District of Columbia, California, New Jersey, and my home state of Massachusetts. Now, I would note that all of those other states and D.C. Have actually relatively little impact of the Jones Act on their own cost of living. So what drives cost of living? Now, in the case of Hawaii, and Paul Brubaker was really very insightful in providing us with this information. Number one is housing. As people like to talk about real estate, it's location, location, location. The three factors that impact the value of real estate. Mm-hmm. So housing, number one, then the cost of utilities, and number three is medical care. Now, well below that are groceries, household goods, clothing, building materials, automobiles, etc. And so what we actually did was to look at the cost of those five types of items that are the primary goods carried by the American carriers between the mainland and Hawaii. And we did an online survey so we could actually look at the price on the same date, actually almost virtually at the same time and under the same terms, for major retailers who had operations in both Los Angeles and Honolulu at that time. And we looked at 200 different items, and we discovered that if you averaged up the cost differential for all of those five categories, essentially in Hawaii, it amounted to an increased price of the basket of goods in Hawaii of 0.5%. These prices were slightly higher in Hawaii than on the mainland. And by the way, for three quarters of those items, retail prices were exactly the same between the comparable stores in California and in Hawaii.
These are the goods that the ocean carriers serving Hawaii carry. So what you're saying is that whatever the effect of shipping is on the cost, the prices that consumers pay are the same in Hawaii for three quarters of these items as they would be in Los Angeles.
Exactly right. Essentially the same. Actually, we found in a number of cases that prices in Hawaii were less. You know, it just indicates that you know, and these are big box operators for sure. You could go out and cherry pick maybe this little store here and that store there has slightly different prices between the two. But if you look on a apples to apples comparison, it's really, there's almost a negligible difference between the mainland and Hawaii in terms of consumer prices.
And I guess it stands to reason that if you know, Honolulu is one of the most expensive places to live, waiving the Jones Act or repealing the Jones Act would not materially lower the cost of living in Honolulu.
Absolutely right. You know, on the same basis. I mean, if you go to Fifth Avenue, a deli in the upper west side of New York City, you're going to find a bagel may cost a bit more than it does over in Brooklyn.
Interesting. Well, let me just see if I can sum up here, because we do need to wrap up the conversation. Hawaii currently has a competitive ocean shipping service with reliable and safe operations. You know, waiving the Jones Act would jeopardize that operation. It would certainly replace the American Mariners, or arguably replace the American Mariners with foreign mariners. That would cost many, many hundreds, if not thousands, of American jobs. It would undermine our national security, expose the Hawaii mainland supply chain to foreign control, and then jeopardize the reliable service that the American carriers now provide. And we would do that in order to save something on the cost of living in Hawaii, but we're finding that that would not have that effect. Did I miss anything there?
No, I think you covered it well, Mike.
So it's not surprising that this idea does not have a lot of support. John, I really appreciate your time. Any final thoughts on your side?
Well, I would just go back to something we already discussed, Mike, that, the studies such as some of the recent ones, they focus on the differential and costs between building a ship in the United States and what an American seafarer earns, but they almost never look at the benefits of the Jones Act, particularly in terms of competitive freight rates, the dedicated services, assets that have been updated and customized to the needs of the people such as in Hawaii, and the key national security implications of a trained seafarer group that can support us in times of overseas military emergencies. Now, these benefits are very important and have to be balanced against just the sort of narrow definition of a cost differential that may not even exist.
That's great. That's very helpful. And I think it's similar to what your study in the Puerto Rico trade landed on, some of those same conclusions. Well, I think that's a wrap, John. Thank you again very much for your work on this study and for your being with us today. And I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in. Please feel free to share this podcast and check out the Hawaii Report, as I mentioned, on the AmericanMaritimePartnership.com website, or follow us on Twitter at AMP Maritime. Thank you again, and this is Mike Roberts signing off.